Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy, Mike. We back at you one more again, live on a Thursday night, man. I hope everybody doing all right, feeling good, feeling great. We having a chilly night in Gainesville, Florida, but we feeling good, feeling great. Gonna have a blast on the cast tonight. We got the homie Robin from RGN Reptiles in the building. We're gonna get to the show in just a second. But first and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takara. Appreciate everything you do. Appreciate you holding us down. Y'all make sure y'all show her some love in the chat, man. Drop a comment, drop some support. Again, appreciate you. Appreciate everything you do. Clutch Conversations is available on all audio podcasting platforms. So please be sure to check us out on the audio podcasting platform. When you in the audio podcasting platforms, please be sure to follow, rate, and review. It really helps us out. It helps us out on the YouTube channel. When you hit that like button, you hit that subscribe button, and you hook smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video. Really appreciate the support each and every week. We really, 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 really appreciate that. And speaking of support, if you're involved in this reptile hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, please make sure that you're supporting both US ARC and US ARC Florida. The links for both organizations are in the description of this video. So definitely go get your membership. If you don't have a membership, drop a donation, drop what you can to help spread the word for both of these organizations to help protect our rights as reptile keepers. Speaking of spread the word, make sure you spread the word about our sponsors. We're going to kick this first sponsor video and then we'll be right back.
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-run business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hognoses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of US ARC, US ARC Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At Armless Angels, it comes to life.
Shout out to the homie Justin. Shout out to the homie Shane. Really appreciate, man. Really appreciate all the support, man, and y'all having confidence in the team. Let's see who we got in the chat tonight. We got the homie Herbert from HB Reptiles, man. Y'all make sure y'all go check him out, man. Appreciate the support, man. Y'all make sure y'all checking out all the dope stuff he's doing. He's got some real nice projects. Paul, what's good, homie? Paul from Large Marge Morse, what's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. The homie Big Wiz in the building again. What's good, homie, man? I appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Rock, what's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. And what's up, what's up, what's up? Appreciate you coming out. Cal, what's good, brother? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. We got one of the sponsors in the building. What's good? Jason in the building. Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Unk, what's good, bro? Steven Jones from World of Morph Constrictors. Appreciate you coming out, brother. Appreciate the support. And we got Wifey in the building. As always, we're going to stop it right there. Appreciate you. Appreciate everything you do.
Baby, baby, won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer. just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch the shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 101, RGN Reptiles. What's good, bro? How you doing?
Hey, man. How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good to have you on, man. We finally linked up.
Yeah. Took a little bit, but thanks for being flexible and allowing me to come on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. Been looking forward to it, man. So real quick, for somebody who might listen, they've been under a rock. They haven't been following social media. They're not up on their social media game. Give yourself a real quick intro.
Yeah, so my name's Robbie. I get to work with ball pythons. That's all I work with RGN Reptiles. And I'm here based out of Greenville, South Carolina. Only a couple of years into the breeding aspect, but I've been a big fan of reptiles for a long time. So originally had snakes around 1998 to 2002 when I was in high school. And before that, like most of you guys, you know, just running around catching snakes and trying to sneak them into the house, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, that's definitely not me when I was young, man. When I was young, I was scared of snakes, bro.
Big thing.
Like I would walk a different direction if I saw like a snake. Like I remember walking home, and this was like as an adult, bro. Like literally, probably like in my mid 20s, right? I remember walking home one night, and I saw a snake on the concrete. Like it was like a black snake or something like that. It was something that was most likely non-venomous, but I didn't know nothing about snakes, right? And so like I was scared, and I remember walking like the whole long way just so I didn't have to pass by that snake. But that snake was probably way more scared of me than I was of it.
Yeah, that's funny. It is funny to see how people react to snakes. I'm half Indian, so I was born in India, and so like part of, you know, there's the Hindus in India. All animals, they're kind of part of their deities and what they worship. And so there's people that are okay with that. And you have all the snake charmers and all that. But then you have like Christians in India, which I come from a Christian background, different part of this, the southern part of India. And they see it as super evil, right? So even as a high schooler, I had them, you know, I would have them in my house and, you know, no one from the family would come into the room. It worked really well. And then my wife is from Latina culture. So, they, you know, where she's from, everything, almost everything's venomous. It was Costa Rica. Most of the snakes down there are venomous. Yeah. They're very careful with snakes. So it's been a long road to convince family and close friends to hang out with me now. So, which is fine.
And you're a pastor too, right?
Yeah,
that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the things I wanted to ask. And so like, not to turn into like a super religious discussion, but to your point, what you just made earlier, like in a lot of like cultures or religions and stuff like that, like snakes are seen as like evil. And so just curious, do you get like any pushback now as far as like that's concerned?
I don't talk about it a whole lot. So okay. Not a lot of people know about it. But like, you know what, those who say folks that are hanging out at my house and I'll come and show them the snake room, like it gives a totally different perspective on, they start to see them as just animals. And then when you show them as, you know, oh, look, you can make this color and take it and make this pattern and all these different things, it breaks down things pretty quickly as far as any religious prejudices or anything like that. And I mean, even how people conceive a pet snake versus like a snake in the wild, like, I'll still jump when I, you know, uncover something and I'm not expecting a snake outside or something like that. So I think just it's when people begin to understand what you're actually doing, and then I'll explain like the business side of things, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, that, okay. So I've actually not had hardly any pushback. I mean, there's jokes, right? The snake handling church type jokes and all that. It is what it is. In our culture, you're still probably kind of seen as weird anyways if you have reptiles. And I think that's changing. It seems like it's changing a lot with a lot of the influencers on the social networks and stuff like that. But I mean, it is what it is. So
yeah, it'll be nice to see like more and more people start getting into the hobby and start like appreciating the hobby, not just being like trendy and it's something that you try to like get in and get out, because a lot of these reptiles like live for a really, really long time. And so they need care just like any other pet that you keep. And so it'll be nice to see like more and more like serious, like enthusiasts and hobbyists and folks like that just continue to enter the industry. Like it would have been cool, like for me, or I feel like it would have been cool, like if I'd have gotten in like way back in the day and kind of seen like the growth from like, let's call it like late 90s, from when I would have been able to like first buy my own stuff to now, that would have been pretty cool to see. But again, I was scared of snakes in the late 90s. So man, I shot myself in the foot with that one.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I guess like 98 was when I was like a freshman in high school, I guess. And you know, I had like, I think eighth grade, I bought some garter snakes from a friend. He brought them to school. I stuck them in my locker. I brought them home. You know, my mom found out, that kind of thing. But because I couldn't have them, like I would just devour anything that I could find. And at that time, there's a website called kingsnake.com. And so I would learn everything off the forums there. And so, and like when I graduated high school, I ended up moving down to Costa Rica. And there you can't really have snakes, but I mean, it's the best herping you can imagine. There's anything you can find. I mean, any animal, like if you want to see birds, if you want to see reptiles, if you want to go fishing, it's just amazing country. And so I didn't get to keep anything, but I kept my eye on what was going on. When we moved back up to the States, which was early 2010, so like 2011. Okay. My little kids, I'd take them to a reptile show, and I realized pretty quick it wasn't the same market as before what I knew. But I could also see that it was a lot bigger. Like I'd just go to our local show here in Greenville, South Carolina, and it was just packed. And that was different. I would go, because I grew up in Dallas.
Okay.
I would go to the whatever. I don't think it was NARBC at that time, but there was a show in Arlington. I remember that much. And I'd go, and there were lines out the door. And that's when I first saw, I think Bob Clark had a whole table full of pies. They were like 25 grand each. And I mean, it was mind-blowing. I remember when I saw my first pie at that time, I was like, I'm going to have one of those someday. And then I saw the price. I was like, oh, I'm never going to have that. but yeah, so it's just been off and on. And then finally in 2020, basically, I was able to convince my wife. Actually, my kids were able to convince my wife to let me get one. And then I was like, hey, look, I can make more. once we opened that can of worms or that bag of snakes, whatever you want to call it, it was over. So it's been fun, though.
Nice. So what was that pickup, that first one?
First pickup, well, like I said, last time I was really in the hobby, albinos were like 5 grand, pieds were like 25 grand, and I was on Morph Market. I was still looking on King Snake because that's all I knew, and then a Morph Market ad popped up, and I clicked on that, and I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And so I was looking through male albino het pied. I looked at it, it said $350. I was like, sold. I'm getting females or anything, right? I was just buying it. And then I picked up a couple of, like, I picked up a double het albino pied female and a pied pos het albino. So that was my first 1.2.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, I have a male, I might as well push him to his limit, so I'll get two more, right? And then so it's at least 1.4. At least that was my my line of argument with my wife as far as pushing that. So
were the other two females in the albino project as well?
So the other two females were Het candies that were Posthet pides. And I had seen the candy project and I was like, oh, it's allelic with albino. And so I still had a little bit of knowledge of how all the genes worked from, or at least from our, you know, layman term, how we talk about genetics, not like what RGI talks about, but so I still had that understanding even after all those years. And so I kind of understood what I could produce, and it was 2020. So everything was selling and everything. And that year, I think I produced four clutches. By the end of the year, I had a lot of other projects going on, but those were my first projects. And I mean, I sold everything, whether it was Craigslist or Facebook, and because I didn't have a Morph Market store or anything like that yet. And I mean, it all sold really quick. So once I realized that there was a market and I could actually do it, then I went pretty hard into investing in stuff.
Okay. So the genetic knowledge that you had, like from back in the day, like I know when I first came in, like that was one of the initial kind of like hurdles that I had to get over, is like understanding how all the genetics work. And so like I watched a ton of videos. I bought one of Kevin's book and like read up. And so like I really made it a point to understand like the ins and outs of how the genetics work. Or again, like as far as like the terms that we use, like nothing on like a RGI or a gray rider reptile level or nothing like that, but just like our basic conversational knowledge. How did you go about obtaining that knowledge like early on?
Yeah, that came all when I was in high school. When I was just reading the forums, I kind of figured it out.
Got it.
I don't know if this is a for real thing. I just, you meet people who they just have a knack for breeding animals, whether it's livestock or dogs or reptiles. And I think a lot of us have that knack to understand that. And I think things click when I talk about animals and I remember stuff about it. So before the reptiles, after high school, I bred dogs for a long time for a very specific purpose. They're working line, security police, military purposes. And so you have to breed a very, very specific way, line breed certain things. And it's just been part of how I process things for some reason. So I'm not good at math. I'm not good at, but I can remember genetics and I can remember animals and all that kind of stuff. So.
Gotcha. I want to dive into like the startup of RGN and all that, but I want to take a little side conversation real quick. So you mentioned like the dogs and whatnot. So were you specializing in specific breeds? Like what breeds were you working with?
Yeah. So, I mean, the global standard now are either Belgian Malinois or Dutch Shepherds.
Okay.
And what no one wants to say is that they're born in the same litters, especially at the highest levels. The brindle ones are the Dutch Shepherds, the brown ones are the Belgian Malinois. it's literally, especially when you go to the more specific, like what they're called, the Dutch lines, Dutch police lines, KMPV lines. A lot of those dogs, they just breed whatever works because that's their only point. And so a lot of those dogs, they're not great pets. They're not going to be great pets. But you have a whole bunch of branching off all of that could be more geared towards search and rescue. Could be narcotics dogs. Could be protection dogs. Could be family security dogs. You know, that kind of thing. And so I did work with those would be in the herder category, like German Shepherds, Dutch Shepherds, Belgian Malinois, that kind of thing. But then me and a group of friends, we worked at a different angle, which was taking large Mastiff type dogs and mixing them with American Bulldog or Pit Bull type dogs, always based on working lineage. So it wasn't what you would see or you would call a bully. They might look like it, but their internal drives were basically a whole nother level as far as what we were wanting them to do. And so you have to breed along those lines. And a lot of times for your breeders, what you need are the most extreme examples character-wise to reproduce what you're looking for. Our goals were to make a stable family dog, but that would turn on when it needed to turn on, turn off when it needed to turn off around the family and stuff. So I was involved with that for quite some time. And then later on, I actually got into a bunch of hunting dogs. So hunting terriers, really small terriers that they go in the ground and hunt animals under the ground, and you dig them out and all kinds of stuff. So just working dogs are something that are a passion of mine as well. And
nice.
So yeah, I've been doing that.
So what specific like character traits, like what were you looking at to identify like if that dog was kind of like the turn off, turn on kind of dog and like a good candidate for breeding and passing along those traits?
So stability, we call it nerves, solid nerves, that they have solid nerves. So some dogs, if you stand behind a fence and act crazy, they'll go off and they'll bark. But as soon as you open the gate to that fence, they back off. So it's normally fear driven or, you know, very nervy type of dog, nervous dog. That's not what you want, because that kind of dog will just bite your kid or whatever. That's not what you want. So what you want is a really, really solid, stable dog. He's not going to jump at loud noises. Things don't stress him out. They're actually pretty chill. And yet at the same time, if they can perceive a threat, then you need to take them to that level where they will engage that threat. And so having it's a dog that, is able to go between drives. So, you know, you have fight drive or, flight drive. Those are like more survival type drives. With dogs, you have what we call prey or play drive. That's where those dogs that just go crazy over a ball, right? Or they go crazy going after squirrels. They have high prey drive. You have dogs that have high defense drive. That's where they turn on really quick as far as they perceive a threat really quickly. You have dogs that have very low drive for certain things. They won't be, you know, so it's just not at that level where if you hide that ball, they'll forget about it after whatever, 2 minutes. What you need, you know, if for a search and rescue dog or a narcotics dog, you need a dog that's going nuts constantly because he wants to find that ball. So you have to really bring it all together. And I'm not a trainer. I've worked with a bunch of trainers, but I'm not a trainer. But, you know, you have to bring all that together in your training to eventually bring you to a place where you have a dog that's stable enough to understand everything. So it's not just the commands, but he's able to read the situation and understand what's going on. So that's why when you get to like executive level protection dogs, you know, low pricing, you're looking at 20, 25 grand. The high end dogs are $65,000-$75,000, and they're coming both from, you know, they're coming from high or lineage of dogs that are known to work well, but they're also coming from, you know, their mental stability is proven. And they've got a very, very high level of training. And so, and you can imagine that takes, you know, 3-4 years of work. So when you think about how much time and money and effort goes into that, then that's why those kind of dogs are so expensive. And really, most of those dogs, they're just one piece to whatever security system that person is looking. And a lot of these are high-end, you know, high wealth individuals. And so that's just part of their security, their tiered security. And what a lot of times is those dogs, I mean, their job is to engage a threat and give you time to get out your gun, get away, whatever it is you need to do. Because and those dogs can't, I mean, they'll fight well, and they love the fight. They actually love a good dog's gonna love what's going on, what's going down. They love to engage. But I mean, when you get someone who's trained, or someone who's on drugs is not feeling pain or something like that, a lot of what the police have to deal with, those dogs take a beating. And so, I mean, they're tools in that sense. They're tools that are used by these different companies, stuff like that. So,
gotcha. Yeah, I never thought about it like that, but that's very interesting. How long did you do that?
I mean, I did it for more than a decade, probably.
Nice. You have a dog now?
I do. I do have a Belgian Malinois, but he's a I got a very low end because I wanted him to be inside the house and be chill. So there's a scale, right? And so I purposely got him from working lines, but he's just a chill dog that if someone comes to the door and he barks, hopefully someone will get scared. I don't think he's going to do anything else than that besides look scary. So, but that's what I need. Like, otherwise it's too much work. It's a lot of liability. You know, it's
yeah.
It's,
yeah. It's and you got to keep those kind of dogs engaged. Like ones that are like high drive like that. You definitely got to keep them engaged.
Yeah.
All right, man. So getting back on the RGN track, I guess let's start there. So how did you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's actually pretty much, it's just the first letters of my family, everybody in my family's name. So, but when I spelled it out, I was like, oh, it's got, you know, gen, even though it's the J, it's like genetics or generation or something like that. And so I figured it fit and it kind of rolled off the tongue well. And so just put our names together and came up with that.
Nice, nice.
It took a while to find something, but yeah, stuck with that.
What did you come up with anything before then that you were kind of like almost?
Yeah, I did come up with a name, and someone has it now, so I don't know if I should say it or not, but it had to do with Costa Rica. And there's a phrase, very, very popular phrase down there. It just means pure life. It's a lifestyle. And so it's Pura Vida. And so I thought Pura Vida pythons, and I didn't do it, but I saw that someone has that now. So I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. Someone has it. So
nice. Nice. Anyone you know or nah?
I've seen him on Instagram and he has a YouTube channel, but I don't know him personally yet.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And so like, let's talk about like the early collection building. Obviously you picked up like that male first and then you got like four females. Where did it go from there?
Yeah. Once I saw that I could do it, like I figured it out and then I saw that they sold. So then I started focusing, okay, what do I want? What do I want to work with? And so when I was way back in the day, the It Snake was pastel and they were like $6,000, something like that. And oh, so wow. I was looking at Desert Ghost popped up on my radar. I was like, oh, it's a bright adult and I like it. And, you know, I started reaching out looking for females. No one was selling females. And then Straight Fire had a couple of females. It was like $500. This was before the big boom. Okay. There was like $500 a female. So I got a couple of those females. And then basically I heard Levance talking on a podcast and he was talking about, you know, if you're getting into it, buy every single double recessive female you can. And so I said, okay, well, my base is going to be Desert Ghost and I like Clown and I like Pied. And so I just started building my collection around that. Now I did, because it was COVID, you know, just the economy was so weird at the time. We were going to refinance the house. We had equity built up. I was like, hey, you know what? I could take some of this and use it to invest in this business. Cause I was already thinking of it in terms of the business. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. I mean, we were getting money out anyways. We were refinancing. It didn't even affect hardly our monthly payment. We had cut it down to 15 years. Like it was amazing what was going on at that time. And so we wanted to take as much advantage of it as possible. And so I used a lot of that money and I got a bunch of, I didn't have money to get double recessives, but I got the recessives plus hets at that time, right? So I got two female DG het pieds.
Okay.
I really like DG Pied and the DG Pied project. And then I got a clown het DG female and then I got a clown pied female. And so those were kind of the basis to my next level of what we wanted to do. And then using the money of selling all the, because I had a bunch of babies, sold them all, and then I sold off all my albino and candy projects and all that kind of stuff. And I used that money to get some males. And one of those males was expensive, but I just thought, hey, man, if I could hit this, it would be awesome. And it was a blackhead that was double het DG clown, which right now it's not. They're not that expensive, but at that time, it was pretty expensive male because it was the only one on the market and it was already like 400 grams. I asked, it was from Dave Levinson, but Will from Royal Canadian Reptiles had produced it. And so I said, hey, would you be willing to wait? You know, if I make a deposit, would you be willing to do a payment plan? He said, yeah. And I was able to pay it off early. And so that kind of those were kind of my big basic basis to what I was doing that first year. And we did get lucky and hit that the double visual with blackhead in it. And so that just kind of took off, or that's basically the basis to my whole collection now.
Was that double visual a male or a female?
Yeah, as a male.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah. So he's going to a bunch of females this year. And he's an amazing eater, he's an amazing breeder. dude's amazing. So
is this your first year breeding him or second year?
This is my first year breeding him.
Okay.
And but he's one of those, you know, it's happened with a couple of males. They just eat well and they grow even more than everybody else. Like, I don't feed them extra or anything. They just happen to grow.
Yeah.
So I hit a male this year that's extremely, he's going to be the next level of to our DG Clown Pie project. And he's already like, he hatched in August and he's like 500 grams. And I mean, I feed him once a week, just like everything else, and just right. grows, you know. I'm hoping that transfers over as to him being a competent breeder as well. So.
Yeah, hopefully that works out for you. It's crazy how, like, I mean, I guess it's not crazy because that means the same thing like with people or any other kind of like living organism. But yeah, like some of them, man, you don't feed them any differently than you feed others, but like the growth is just like world of difference. I've got like clutch mates that they get fed on the same schedule, basically. Maybe like a one off like here and there, like if someone's in shed and they don't eat that week or just whatever is happening, you know what I mean? But basically the same schedule, same sex, same clutch, all that, but like a 400 gram difference.
Yeah. It's amazing to see that. And I think snakes in themselves have like this plasticity so that, you know, sometimes they go through these phases where they really grow fast and other times they just don't seem like they're growing. Or like when there's some that, you know, they don't eat a whole lot and then they're small and then they finally start eating and they catch up with all the others. Or there's ones that, you know, start off great and then they slow down. It's really interesting to see how they all, you know, they're individuals, they're different. And so it's cool to see that.
Exactly. So DG Clown Pod. Did I miss one?
No, that's the base. That's basically all I have. So
what drew you to those projects specifically?
Well, like I said, DG, I think it's just seeing adults that look great. And so I like that. Clown, I think, is just, it'd be weird not to have clown in the collection. I didn't even like it much. And I remember not liking it and then, or saying that I didn't like it at least. And then most of my stuff was clown.
Was that when you first saw clowns, like way back in the day, or was that like?
I remember way back in the day when clown was there and it was extremely expensive. But I think when I got in, it's just everybody had it. And so I don't know if I want to work this. The deal I think that changed me was, I like DG Clown and I like putting clown into other stuff. And I like seeing how it reacts with other recessives and stuff. So like, I wasn't a fan of like the Clown Pie project. And then I got one. I was like, this is cool. Cause it changes the color. There's some have just this wacky pattern. I don't know if it's another gene floating around, but it just whacks out the pattern. And it's really cool. So the clown started growing on me when I saw how it reacted with other recessives.
Nice. So what's this breeding season looking like for you? How's the season going?
This upcoming season, so I'm coming off my best season, and this upcoming season has been pretty disappointing so far. You know, it's funny because every year I'm like, oh, okay, it's October, I'm going to start pairing. Nothing ever starts growing until like January anyways, but I just have to, it's like I got to do something. So it's probably me wasting my males and not doing it, being too smart with it, but. So anyways, right now, no, I do have a couple of females that are probably in the 25 millimeter range.
Oh, nice. And,
they are, I have the shot at, with both of them hitting the triple. One would be hopefully, the home run would be Leopard Yellow Belly DG Clown Pied. And then the other would be Leopard Yellow Belly DG Krypton Pied, because the triple hit. DG Cryptic Pied female. And so that's that male, the male that's going to them is actually a breeder loan with a friend of mine. So that's a new kind of new for me. And then my blackhead DG clown male, he's gone to several, and I think some of those females are probably in the 20 millimeter range right now. So
okay, well, you're definitely way ahead of me as far as like follicle development. Like, I don't really get anything like of note for most of my girls until about like late February,
okay,
early to mid March, like somewhere up in there. And like most of my clutches come like later in the year. Like I'll start having some clutches like probably August. Then it gets really heavy like in September, October. Okay, yeah. And then it kind of like tapers off about mid-November. And I even had like, I've got two clutches that got laid in December and that I got them in the incubator now. I think we're probably on like day 25 or something like that. Yeah. But I've only ultrasounded once for this season. And the biggest girl I want to say was at like maybe 10 to 12, something around about there. That was where the biggest girl was. And she was a girl that reabsorbed on me last year.
Yeah.
And I was really looking forward to that clutch because I was hopefully going to hatch like some confusion clown combo animals. But she reabsorbed on me. I had like the worst luck with like just my confusion clown combo stuff. And so like I got one more shot, which is in the incubator. But two of the nine eggs, I looked in there the other day, two of the nine eggs look like they're going bad. I'm not gonna do anything with them. I'm gonna just leave them there and go full term, and maybe I'll get like a nice little surprise. But I've yet to have that happen to me. Like I see people saying, like, this is why I incubate until there's no debate. I was gonna throw this egg away, and then boom, I got like this 34 gene combo snake out of it.
Yeah, there you go.
That never happened to me, man.
No, it's not happened to me yet either. Oh man. Confusion clowns, man, those are really cool looking. I think how they blow up the pattern, that's a good project. I have one female. Well, she's supposedly confusion, but we don't know because she doesn't look like anything else that we've seen. But I got her as a red stripe, yellow belly confusion het clown female. She looks pretty cool, but I'm not
red
sure.
Red stripe, yellow belly confusion het clown or clown?
Het clown female. Yeah.
Het clown female. Okay, nice. Nice.
And but I posted a picture of her, and everybody's like, she doesn't have confusion. So I don't know. Her,
she doesn't have confusion?
That's what most folks were saying. But she doesn't look just like red stripe yellow belly either. So she's on my Instagram. She looks crazy looking. So I don't know what she
is. I was trying to see if I could pull it up real quick.
Yeah. She, you should be. She's like, there's one where she's like on a white background, I think. And, but yeah, she came from a Pompeii to a confusion het clown breeding.
Okay.
And so that was the best that the breeder could guess.
Pompeii to confusion clown, you said?
Confusion het clown, yeah.
Confusion het clown. Okay, gotcha.
But I know she's on there somewhere. It's one of my most liked pictures because she's crazy looking. Yeah. It's, let me see if I can show you.
Put you on the solo. I can figure out how to do it. Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's blurring out a little bit. But yeah, so she's pretty cool looking, but I don't know everything that might be in her.
Yeah, hopefully she proves out for you.
Yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully, fun. Yeah. Confusion is one of my favorite genes just in general. Codon or recessive is definitely one of my favorites, and I hope to hit some confusion clowns. Like I need it.
Yeah.
I need it for my project. Like,
Now, there's so much you can do. I think with a pattern disruptor like that, there's just so much that you can do with it, and so much you can add to it. I think that's why it's so exciting to me. So hopefully you can hit some of those.
Do you think confusion and acid are the same?
Yeah. Yeah, or that's I've heard static confusion acid are all the same. They sure look the same.
Yeah, facts. Yeah, I feel like they're the same too. What do you think about this hurricane stuff? You're not do you work with any hurricane? You don't have any?
I do have a red stripe, or she's possible hit red stripe, but she's a yellow belly hurricane het clown female. I'll tell you this. I mean, they're saying that's the same gene. I have no problem with that. But hurricane, if you look at the examples, at least for sale on Morph Market, it seems to be, maybe it's line breeding or something. It seems to be a much higher quality of pattern disruptor or whatever the gene is. It just seems to be a whole other level of quality in most cases. I have seen like the Super Tricks, and those look pretty cool as well. But like when you compare, but even in hurricane, I have seen some hurricanes that don't look like hurricanes as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, I've seen some that I would have sworn were super hurricane, and they're telling me, no, it's just hurricane. So that's kind of where what you want to get. I'm guessing if you want to get into that gene, that's what I would probably be doing. So,
Yeah, I would say I would agree with that. I've seen like both extremes with like both genes, right? Like I've seen like some really, really nice hurricanes, and I've seen some really, really meh hurricanes.
Yeah.
And I've seen some nice trick stuff. I feel like Abe, and maybe I'm biased because I bought some of it from him, but Abe has like some of the best trick stuff like out there from what I've seen. And so I got like a real nice trick head clown girl from him like a couple years back, who should be doing some work for me this year. But she's like really, really nice. Like for a while, he was thinking she may be Trojan, but he wasn't sure. I don't think she's Trojan, but she's just a really good example of like trick. But then I've seen like some other trick where I feel like they're trying to trick you because I don't see nothing there.
No. I tried to get that female from him, and then I think you got it because.
Oh really?
I think so. I mean, all his Trojan trick stuff is really cool. And then I think it's 31 South. I can't remember his name right now. Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah. He's got some trick DG stuff maybe that looks really, really good. So I think whether it's trick or hurricane, I mean, as soon as you start stacking them into combos, I don't know if it's going to affect. I imagine people only are upset about it because it affects price, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that's a big part of it.
But once you start stacking genes, I don't think that affects price at all. I think, I mean, a multi-gene snake is a multi-gene snake with that level of pattern disruptor or genetic, you know, that kind of gene is going to cost the same. I would pay the same if it's a, you know, Trojan trick clown compared to a hurricane Trojan clown. It probably looks similar, and you know, it's still desirable, and there's not a whole lot of them available. So
yeah, like genetically speaking, they probably are the same. I mean, obviously those tests aren't infallible, but it looks like the evidence is lining up to where they're genetically speaking, at least they're the same. But I do feel like probably there are some examples of some stuff that was like line bred, and so there's like really good examples. So yeah, I would agree with that.
And it is, I mean, it's something we can learn from, I think, in the ball python hobby at least, because it doesn't seem like we do a whole lot of line breeding. Every other animal species that people do, they line breed for certain traits.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you can just imagine what line breeding would do. Line breeding on the best would do. It'd be cool.
Yeah. I've been a lot more selective than I was at first in terms of like picking out animals too. Just like even with like a gene, like I know the morph's there, but I want like the best example that I can find. Like if it's an example that I'm really not impressed by, then I'll pass on that animal, because all the animal's going to do is like pass down that unimpressive like version of that gene, and then I'm not going to be happy. So I might as well look for what I want and get what I want. Like make cool, like buy cool stuff, breed cool stuff, make cool stuff.
No, for sure. And I think as we mature, like personally, as we mature in what we're doing, I think we start to realize that. And overall, that helps the hobby, because we're pushing out the best that we can.
Facts.
And that our resources allow us to. So.
Facts. So I realized I skipped right over last season and didn't really ask questions about last season. But you said last season was your best season. So what made it so good?
Yeah, let's see. I hit a lot of good odds on what I was going for. Last season was really focused on DG Pied, and so I had an excellent male to sire all those clutches, and so was able to. Like I have a really small collection, so I think I did a total of 9 clutches out of whatever 12, 13 pairings. Almost all were based around DG Pied. I did a couple that were more pet, geared towards pet stuff. So banana, but with like black pastel and yellow belly, orange dream, and supposedly calico, but unfortunately, it seems that it wasn't calico and it was scrambler, and I sold everything, and I sold the male that had it as well.
Oh, wow.
So I messed up on that one, but I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know, and I was just trying to move things and get things sold. So, but I let everybody
figure it out.
Well, I had like 20 babies from this one male and only one that I was like, oh, this is calico. But they all looked weird. They looked super weird. And I was like, okay, I don't know. Maybe you just, it's one of those odds things. And then I started watching Chris Hernan's video, who the male came from. He's like, oh, a lot of my stuff has scrambler in it. I was like, shoot, that's probably it. So I texted him and I sent him pictures. He's like, yeah, that's probably scrambler. I was like, hey, you got to be kidding me. I had it all over my collection. I got rid of it all. So one of those lessons that that you learn, not to get rid of everything. If it looks cool, probably should keep it because it might be something else. So
dang. So what was your most powerful holdback that you produced last year?
So I had two. I kept a ton back. So I have I hit really good odds. I had like five clown combo double head DG pie females. I had a couple.
What genes you got floating in those?
So they're not, well, one is pastel, but I did move her. I traded her for something.
Okay.
So she was a pastel inchy clown double head DG pied. Although both pastel inchy, I think, are fine in the DG clown pied project just because of what they're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then I have two inchy clowns that are double head DG pied. I have two hatchling clowns that are double head DG pied. I have a female adult that's about to go. That's one of the ones that's about to lay. And then I have I produced two DGs that are double head clown pieds. I moved one of those. There's females, all females. And then I did hit a couple of triple heads, but my best holdbacks. So I hit two. I hit a male and a female. I hit one male that's a stranger DG pied. That's head cryptic. And nice. Then I hit a pastel stranger DG pied that's head clown, and she's a female. And so those are two out of the same clutch that, I don't even know how to put a number on what those might sell for. However, I know what I can produce in the coming years with those. And so when you start mixing in what I've been working with my DG clown stuff, which is for this year, just a lot, it'll be, blackhead, stranger, orange dream, DG clown pied craziness kind of stuff going on. So that's what I'm hoping. And I like cryptic and krypton. And so I'll be mixing that stuff as well.
Yeah. Those are some nice genes to have floating around in that project.
Yeah. I wanted to go the darker genes in DG just to try to highlight the contrast. I do think pastel in DG is still, people might not like it, but man, it's you compare like a inchy DG to a pastel inchy DG. Pastel inchy DG blows, in my opinion, blows it out of the water. I mean, it just takes it to a whole nother level as far as brightness and contrast. And the pastel blackhead DG, oh my goodness, man! It's crazy how good they look. And so I think mixing some of these dark genes and light genes into DG, and then adding the other recessives, that's kind of what the way I'm going.
Have you seen like that blackhead confusion pied? I think
I have not seen. Oh, it's like super orange, right? Is it really orange?
No, this one was really dark and like really smooth. Like, it's hard to explain, but yeah, I saw one the other day. It was like, it was at least blackhead confusion and pied. There might have been like one other gene in it, but it was like, it was real smooth, like kind of had like a mocha look. Like, if I'm looking for like a way to describe the color and just like how it looked, it was really nice. Like, I was surprised that was the interaction. Like, I was pretty impressed by it.
Yeah. They might know this now, but blackhead and pied, it's hard for me to say there's a better gene than pied than blackhead. Like, it adds pattern. So it's not as much as inchy, but it'll add pattern, and it brings in it like intensifies the darkness. So when you mix it with like an orange dream or something, it just gets this crazy orange black chocolate color. And it's really cool. So I'm hoping if the male do his work, which he hasn't done great so far this year, but if he'll do his work. I'm hoping to hit a Blackhead DG Pied, maybe even with like a Blackhead Orange Dream from DG Pied this year.
Yeah, that would be dope. I hope you hit it because I definitely want to see it.
Yeah, I would like to see it as well.
So best of luck on that for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I want to take a real quick break for the sponsors. We're going to kick that video, and then we'll be right back and touch on a couple more subjects.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience Ebony and Ivory Reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and Ivory Reptiles.
Shout out to the homies, man. Appreciate you, Jason. Appreciate you, Matt. Really appreciate the love. Appreciate the support, man. Y'all make sure y'all go out there and check out all their social medias. Check out their dope productions. I know both of those guys gearing up for like a really heavy season for 2024. So y'all make sure y'all be checking that out. So speaking of the breeding season, you were saying that things were starting off kind of slow for you. So talk about like your typical timeline for your season.
So I think the females actually only start, for the most part, they'll start building in January. The earliest I've gotten clutches maybe April, but most of them come in the June to August time frame. And then this past year, I had some random clutch late in December. She just decided to go for some reason. And so, but most of it, and it wasn't, and the clutch was a weird clutch. So, but most are between, you know, basically June to August.
Gotcha. So when your girls are building, and I know it's probably different from like girl to girl, but do you tend to have like girls that like start building, build really quickly and go through the cycle like at a pretty quick rate, or does it drag out? I know most of my girls, I feel like it drags out all through.
From what I can tell, so this is really the first season that I'm actually using an ultrasound.
Okay.
And I'm not good at using it. I'm having to learn a lot. And so, but most of the time I start seeing them, you know, just try to observe them. It seems to, they'll be like kind of on a growth trajectory. And then all of a sudden they explode. Like it seems to happen really quick, like almost within a month. I'm sure there's a lot happening before that, but then you can just finally see it in that month. But it seems, to me, it seems in the 3 to 4 month range that they decide not, you know, they decide to go or not to go in my facility, in my room. So I would say it happens pretty quick. So far, I mean, I don't have near as many females or as many years under my belt as some others. So that's just my experience.
How many locks are you typically getting?
So before the ultrasound, I was just trying to do 3 locks, the typical once a month and then done. Now that I'm using the ultrasound and I can see, like I'm probably going to try to get a lock to get them started. I don't know if that helps or not, but, you know, to get it started, 10 to 12 millimeters and then maybe something around, you know, mid 20s and then likely they're going to go. Maybe just for my own peace of mind sake, stick them after 30. But from what I understand, they really only need one lock if you just hit them right with it and keep on feeding them. From what I understand, the feeding cycle is actually more important for them, getting them to go than the actual locks.
Are you ramping? Do you ramp up your feeding like whenever you're?
Unfortunately, I do not have my own feeders, so I just kind of feed the same all year round. What I do is get extra feeders and feed them 2 or 3 at a time if they seem like they're really eating.
Gotcha.
Or the ones that'll eat frozen, I've done this and it seems to have worked really well. I got a buddy of mine. He'll just give me retired breeders that are frozen and I'll stick them in there. And I mean, these things, and these are big females, right? These are 2,500 gram, 3,000 gram females, and they take it down no problem. And you don't have to feed them for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Gotcha. Yeah, going back to what you said about like that jump off pairing, like I hear different opinions about that, right? So I hear some people who swear by it. Like they're like, yeah, do that jump off pairing. That encourages follicle growth and that'll get your girls going. Then I hear some people say, hey, don't do that. Like wait until like they start building. Once they get to a certain size, then start pairing them. I've been erring on the weight side, like for most of my stuff. Like last year, that's what I did. That's what I'm doing this year. But I might, for like some of my larger males that are older and maybe it's not going to as many girls, I might just throw stuff in there and just kind of like see what happens. I'm still in like a very kind of like scientific method stage of what I'm doing right now. And so I'm not like set 100% in most of the stuff that I do. I still experiment here and there just to kind of like see what works best for me. Yeah. And take calculated risks.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. I think for me, it's there's a framework to how this works, and it's pretty easy, especially being ball pythons. I think other species would be, it'd be quite a bit different, but for ball pythons, I think it's a framework that we can use, and it's like within that framework, wherever you're at, inside that, then it'll likely work. And I think obviously, you know, as we talked about, these are individual animals; each one's different. So I've thrown males in to lock with 1,000 gram females, and they go by 1,400 grams, 1,300 grams. My biggest snake, I think she's a DG. She's like 3,000 plus grams. She's never given me a clutch. Eats every, I mean, she'll eat as much as I'm putting in there for her. So, I mean, it is what it is. I probably paired her 30 times. I don't know how many times I've paired her.
Yeah, I got a girl like that too. Like, she's probably about right at 3,000, if not maybe a little bit over it by now. But zero clutches. She's building. Like, she's one of those girls that's farther along. Yeah. But I put a male in there, and I never witnessed a lock. Like, I saw them courting, or it looked like they were courting. Like, they were pretty close together. Like, they had a little bit of, like, tail action, right? And so, like, it was kind of close. And so, like, I just tried to leave them alone, but I never actually saw the actual lock. I recorded it because, like, I had that male in there, and there might have been something that I missed, because that's definitely possible. But yeah. I didn't witness an actual lock. And last year, I paired her. I actually put two males in there with her. Last year, I put, like, the primary male, and I put the backup male. She locked with both of those males last year, but reabsorbed. And wait, let me back up. So she stopped locking with the males like after like a couple pairings, and then she ended up reabsorbing. And so like this year I put like the main male in there, but like I said, I didn't see nothing. So maybe she did it, maybe she didn't, I don't know. But it just seems like she's real standoffish and she ain't trying to lock.
Yeah. And it's weird sometimes. You know, they just don't like each other. Other times I had a male, I put him to a bunch of stuff and only ever got one clutch out of him. But you would see him lock every single time. But I wonder if there's like false locks, like they might do it, but like their tails might cross or whatever, but there's nothing really happening there. I've wondered about that before as well, especially with certain males. And so, you know, maybe is, you know, is sperm is just not viable. I don't know. So I think there's a lot of variables and factors that, you know, like I said, that's why we have to have like a framework and not just, okay, this is what you do, this and this and this and this and this, and then that will be the result. We just, I mean, they're animals, they're living beings. So we can't be 100% certain on everything that's going to happen. And so that's why we have to kind of hold it loosely. Right.
Right. And,
which is the difficult part if you're trying to make this like a full-time business, then that's why you have to have a certain number of animals even to make it feasible to do it, because you can't control everything.
Right, 100%. Do you like adjust temperatures or anything like that?
I don't. I keep it pretty much the same all year round. The very first year, someone had told me about that, I dropped the temps like 3 degrees and I had a snake get sick. I was like, I'm not doing that ever again. But come to find out, she was already sick. It just revealed something within her.
And what was wrong with her?
It was just some. They just told me, it's a bacteria fever, this or whatever.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned that you don't have feeders. I thought I heard you talking one time about like starting a rodent business or investing in a rodent business. Is that something you ended up doing?
Yeah, I did. Actually, someone from church, I was able to get him to to start feeding that. So it worked out well. And he's like, he's an IT software type guy. So he gets to work from home and he's super perfectionist. And so he does a great, great job. So I invest in the business, but I don't get my feeders from him because we're trying to get more clients. And so I can't take up our product or I don't want to take up our product. But I do have some really good guys near me that produce. And so I just get my stuff from them.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what's the show circuit like in South Carolina? I know Troy was talking about like some good stuff. Are you near Troy?
Which Troy is that?
From Balls and Strikes.
Oh, I don't know him.
Okay. Okay.
I know of him. I think he's in Columbia. It's about an hour and a half away, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So I've done one show, and I had zero sales. But it was my fault. Like all I had was higher end stuff. And so I think my cheapest thing on the table was maybe $350 or something like that. And so you're probably not going to move that stuff at our local show. Mm-hmm. So we've had Repticon forever. I stopped going there a while back, and then we had Show Me shows that were here. And that's the one I did. And at that time it was good, but then I think they couldn't get that venue back. So they have not been back since then. So that's been like two years, maybe, I don't know. So shows, I don't think I would do anything local. Maybe if we went down to Atlanta, and did one of those there, but I hardly ever have enough, to justify, I don't have enough inventory to justify doing a show. I'm hoping maybe because I normally go to the Arlington show.
Mm-hmm.
My parents live in town, so it's just the easiest big show for me to get to. So I'll someday I hope to maybe been there, but I've thought about the one now that's in Dallas. I think it's in April, and one of my buddies he got a bunch of tables, so I've thought about doing that, but I've got to see if I have anything to sell. So we'll see.
True. Have you done any auctions?
I did do some auctions, man. This is a big learning curve. So
what are your thoughts on like the overall process so far and whatnot?
Yeah. So I'm excited about it. I like it. Let's see. So my first auction, I made the big, I was learning. I was trying to figure it out. So I put one of my high-end stuff up, and I put a clown double-head DG Pied female. She's like 500 grams. So I had a certain price in my mind, what I wanted to get for it. And so I put a very high starting price, probably the highest starting price out there. And then I put a reserve above that. So I got zero bids. I learned about that really quick. I learned from that really quick. It was fun to see that, because I started seeing everybody else put their auctions up, and you start seeing them get like a million bids. I was like, okay, yeah, I did this wrong. So the second one, and I was super happy that they allowed a second one, at least this month, but just because I think I was just trying to figure it out, right?
Right.
This, I put my lowest in snake, and it's a male, it was a male pastel and chi clown het DG, which is funny to think like 2 years ago, that would have been a high-end snake. It's not a high-end snake anymore. And this time I did no starting bid and no reserve. And so I got about, I think I had them listed for $400, and I got $275 for them. It was $225 plus shipping. I was like, what in the world? The guy gets it, and then I find out he's in Mexico. I'm like, I was going to include free shipping, but now I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. So we worked it out. So it's been interesting. I'm excited about using it to move some of the lower end stuff. And I think it feels to me a lot of people are, there's some excitement about it. There's some momentum. People are buying stuff. And so I'm all for it. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Like, I like it as well. I've sold 2 snakes on the auction.
So okay, far. Great.
I'm ecstatic about it.
Yeah. No, I did notice they're going for like 60 or 70% of the listing price. So I think that's just, I think one, that's the market we're in. And two, it's helping us see where the market is actually at. Like in our minds, it's at a certain point, and obviously right. We want it at a certain point, but where it's actually selling at, and obviously it's an auction. So, you know, people are trying to get good deals. I understand that. But I do think it gives us a better barometer on where the market's at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like the auction sales price in my mind might not necessarily be 100% reflective of the market value, but it does give you kind of like a good, like you said, a good barometer for where you're at. I do think just because it's the auction, there's like other kind of like factors and stuff like that that has an effect on the price, but it's good to kind of like see like at least where stuff is that you post and like watch other like auctions and stuff that you're following for like projects and stuff like that. I do think the sweet spot is probably like your $500 to $1,000 animals. That's probably going to be like the kind of stuff that sells in an auction and you get like a good value for it. That's the kind of stuff that I plan on putting in there. And I'll probably like limit it to 3 days. Reserve price, I don't know. Like I see all the posts and stuff. It's like the best thing to do is not have a reserve and people are going to bid on it, this, that, and the third. But I tell you, like I posted an animal with no reserve and I was like sweating bullets. That, yeah. Like, I was going to like sell it for like $100 and I didn't want to sell it for $100, but I would have obviously like honored it because you know what I'm saying? Like you understand what you're getting into when you post it that way. But it actually like got some good bids and so it sold at a reasonable price too. But I do think it's beneficial for moving like certain animals and I plan to like use it like every month. Like I'm exhausted until I ain't got no animals that fit in that category to post for an auction. I'm gonna keep doing it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, like I had stopped looking at Morph Market and with the auctions now I do look at it again. I just want to see who, you know, if you see something that, you know, some, you know, confusion, hurricane, Wookiee, clown, and it's starting out at like $200, I'm going to bid on it. there's a limit. I'm going to stop, but you never know. Right. So I've liked the feature. I've enjoyed the feature for sure.
So did you, in terms of like, the auction duration, did you use the same amount of days for the first and the second animal, or did you change that?
No, so the first one I put up for 5 days, the full amount of days was. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, I think he limited it to 3 days now.
It's limited to 3 now.
Yeah, yeah. So I just put it up for 3 days as well.
Okay.
I'm thinking for the next one, it'll be interesting to see if the amount of days matter. It seems more like there's a couple starting bids and then everybody waits until the auction is getting close to end to finish up. So I wonder if that, like if you compress that into 1 day, will that work? Will that be the same day? Would you get the same amount? Or if you leave it for more time, if it's going to go up, I don't feel like it is. I feel like either it's, you know, people are just watching, oh, this has got 10 hours left. I'm going to start bidding now, whether it started in the morning or whether it started 3 days ago. But I mean, I think Darian, who, I mean, I don't know personally or anything, but I would imagine that he's watching all that. So it'd be cool to hear what he's seeing from the back end.
Yeah, that would be cool to like see like all the data. Like I see my animals, but it'd be nice to see like the data on all that. That's pretty cool and interesting. But I noticed like that same kind of phenomenon like with mine, like regardless of like the duration. Like the first one, I think I did for 5 days, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And like there were some like bids early on. It got to like a certain dollar amount, whatever that dollar amount was, and then it was like quiet.
Yeah.
And then like right at the end, like there were a few more that rolled in. And then when I posted the one for 3 days, there were some bids. It was quiet. Then there's like a bid that kind of like upped the ante a little bit, but then it was like quiet. And then someone swooped in and sniped them at the last minute.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, but it there is like that quiet phase. So I don't know if the number of days matter, because I feel like there's going to be that quiet phase. It's just like, how long is that quiet phase? But when you just go into the ball python section, like this is how I do it. Like I'll go into ball pythons, I'll click the auction tab. It's automatically sorted by like auction that's ending the soonest.
Yeah.
So that puts it right in front of people's like face that, hey, this animal's right here. And so like the first two pages are like animals that the auction is going to be over with in like a less than 24 hours. And so like you're more likely to see those versus like scrolling through. It's probably like what, 7-8 pages now on the app. And so that's growing, but like those animals that where the auction is ending soon, they're going to market those. And so that's going to drive a little bit of that too.
Yeah.
Incentive too, right?
It'll be interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say there's incentive too, right? Like, I feel like some people probably like stop like bidding because like the more they bid, then the higher the price goes. So they just kind of like chill and say, hey, I'm going to come back to this later.
Yeah. Well, what I had on the second one, someone started with like $5 and then someone bid like $200. And then no one bid until the very end. One, I did try to push on social media that I had to auction up. I think you got to do that just so people are aware. And then the other piece to that is, so because it's limited 3 days, you have new auctions every, I mean, it's changed now. So sometimes at the height, I saw maybe 100, I mean, when I was checking at least, like 150 auctions, and then it would drop to like 60 auctions. And so I like that as well. It's not just constantly growing more and more auctions. I do wonder how it's going to affect the rest of Morph Market, though. If you are trying to buy something via auction, I mean, I think for real investors, they're going to look for what they want and what they want for their projects, and they're just going to go buy that.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I would imagine we won't have really much understanding until, you know, in the 3 or 6 months, I would assume, on how it's all going to play out.
But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how all of that plays out. But to your point, yeah, you're right. Like there's certain animals that A, probably will never go up on auction just because of like the level of animal that it is. And then B, people will be seeking those animals out individually because they don't want to auction. They need that animal for that project. This animal is going to advance their project. They need to buy that animal. And so based on what they have in their collection and their needs for their projects, that animal's worth the price that the breeder's selling it for. And so like, I need this animal. So it'll be interesting to see how it all kind of like plays out.
For sure. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, anything that starts to get the gears of the industry moving again, I think is great. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see that you get like more inquiries now, or how's that for you?
I get very, very few inquiries on Morph Market. I think there's a couple reasons. One, the projects that I'm working, they are higher end, so the amount of people looking for that is not as much. And then two, you know, some of the stuff I'm letting go, I don't really want to let go, so I don't budge too much on the price. Now I have done it. And sometimes I'm just like, okay, I need to some influx of cash for the business to do, and then I'll do that. But I will, even though this was my best year as far as sales this past year, I also I had to work a whole lot harder than any of the years before to move things. And then also, I mean, what I held back, the value amount of what I held back a couple of years ago would have been probably over 100 grand. Now it's probably in the 40 to 60 grand range. So, which is a lot of, I mean, that's a ton of money.
Right.
If you look at it that way. So, I think overall, I'm going to always probably pay for my Morph Market store. I think it's necessary, but I probably get hit up more on Instagram for things. And I always try to push them towards Morph Market because I think it's necessary and I think it's a great platform. I think it's huge for us. I don't think it's very expensive for what we get out of it. And so I would encourage anybody who's trying to make a real business of this to be on it.
Yeah, I actually ended up upgrading my Morph Market membership yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Because nice. When you go to premium, you can do 3 auctions a month.
Yeah.
And so like I did, because I do like the annual plan, so I can just like pay it at one time and save a little bit on a monthly basis. And so like when I did the math, I think it was like $18 a month to upgrade.
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like that one auction should pay for that.
Yeah. No. And actually like
$18 snake then.
Yeah. But you know what though? I was looking at the exact same thing yesterday. So the standard month to month, which is what I've been doing, is $49. The whatever the next level up, if that's premium, if you pay for a year, so it's $47. So it's actually less money per month for a tier higher if you pay annually than if you pay month to month. And so yeah, I haven't done it yet, but I'm trying to. I need to sell one more snake before I do it. But once I do it, then I'm either gonna stay at the same tier, but it drops from $49 a month to like $27 a month. Like that's huge.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a good deal to do the yearly payment.
Yeah, it's definitely a good deal to do the annual payment because like you said, you save a ton.
Yeah.
And so hopefully I can average at least $18 a month with that one extra auction. So I hope so. If I can't, it's a problem.
Oh, man. There's other problems. There's
right.
Other problems going on right there.
Yeah, I leave, man. I thought this $18 was going to be a good investment.
Yeah.
So have you gotten to the point to where you have like repeat customers and stuff like that?
Yes, I have. Or at least multiple snake, you know, at one purchase. So that's good. I also, you know, I'm working with a guy down in Mexico.
Okay.
And we're trying to work together. So I've sent him some stuff to sell down there. He's nice. Brought me. We're trying to, you know, take some projects down there that aren't really down there, nor do they have a lot of access to. So like DG Pied is very, very small down there. And so now he's probably going to become one of the few distributors of DG Pied down there because mm-hmm. You know, he's bought for me and I'm sending stuff down there. So they'll be my snakes, but he'll breed them and sell them. And overhead is much lower there. And then okay. he's a vet. And so he's got credibility. He has all the, he has the scientific knowledge, health knowledge. And so I'm super excited to be working with him as well.
How'd you make that connection? Like, was that somebody you came across in social media?
Mutual? Yeah. Well, I had a guy buy from Mexico. And so I kept developing that relationship and he was wanting to become a registered because there's a bit different. You have to be registered with the government and all that. And okay. He was wanting to, and he couldn't for some reason, his paperwork couldn't get done. So he introduced me to this other guy. And so we just started talking and I lived in Costa Rica for a long time. So I speak Spanish and know a bit of the culture and such. And so, or the Hispanic Latino culture and such. And so we just hit it off and it just started basically, okay, and trying to envision something together. And that's what we've come up with. So we're still in that phase, kind of like a neutral zone of transition of how does this look? Are you buying stuff from me? Are you selling it for me? Do I get a kickback? That kind of thing. But he's going to have some very, very high-end stuff that he's scared he won't be able to move in Mexico. So I said, okay, you send it up here and I'll try to move it for you. So it'll be mutually beneficial. Well, we hope that it's a mutually beneficial partnership. Anything business, unfortunately, business relationships can be a very, very tight rope to walk. But I mean, it is what it is. If you can both benefit from it, it's a win for everyone, including our customers, then that's what we want to do. So
100%. Yeah, that sounds exciting, man. I hope that works out for you.
Yeah, I do too.
That'd be dope.
I think it'd be cool. And so I do have plans, hopefully, maybe later this year to go down to one of their big expos. And I couldn't go down this past year, but hopefully it'll be coming up this year.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be really dope. You said DG was a project that there wasn't a ton of there.
There's not a ton of there. There will be, but what I'm working with him right now is DigiPied stuff, getting him DigiPied stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that'll be really cool. That stuff will blow their mind.
Yeah. Now you won't get as much money, I think, as you would up here, but at the same time, because the market, I mean, just people don't have as much money, obviously, in most of those cities. You have the guys that have a ton of money. There's very, very wealthy people down there. But for the most part, I think they're still in that phase where they're looking for, you know, $500 to $1,500. So selling a $5,000 snake down there probably is not super common. Probably a $3,000 snake is possible, but I think most of your sales are going to come $1,500 and under. Because and they're willing to pay that, especially if it's already in country. It's a lot less risky for them because they don't have to pay someone in the States for it and then have to have it come through however they bring it down there, which, I mean, it's multiple steps of shipping, right? So you can't just ship directly.
Gotcha. There's a snake in Puerto Rico that I saw, and I don't remember the morph, but I just remember it was in Puerto Rico, and I just passed on it because I didn't want to go through like all the shipping stuff, but it was a pretty cool snake. But like, from what I hear, like the international shipping isn't as hard as like I got it in my head. So yeah. I might look into some of that stuff.
Puerto Rico is different because it's a U.S. territory.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Phoenix does that, and I think Delta Dash does that. But the pain for me, because I shipped a snake down there, or two snakes down there, the pain for me was finding a vet that would do the health certificate thing that you need to give or to put in the box to send it down there. So that was more difficult. And then I've shipped to the UK and I've shipped to Thailand, but that I just let the buyer arranges that, and they just say, hey, ship it to this address here in the States and they'll get it to me. So gotcha. What I do with that is say, hey, okay, I'll be responsible until it's in the hand of your importer exporter. Once it's in their hands, like I can't guarantee anything after that. I can guarantee everything up to that, and I'll accept and I'll eat that, and I've had to eat that kind of stuff. But after that, I can't guarantee. And they're good with it. I mean, they're the ones, you know, they're investing a bunch. But I think that's probably why they mainly go to the bigger breeders who have their own CITES paperwork and function as their own importer exporter, which would be amazing. But I don't have enough inventory to justify that, or overseas clients to justify that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know what the hell I was thinking saying international with Puerto Rico, but I remember like how that setup was. I think I would have had to like go to the airport and pick it up. Uh-huh. And so I probably would have to drive all the way to Jacksonville, which isn't that far, but it was a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's still, I mean, you were right in the sense that it does work differently than just shipping here on the mainland of the U.S. Like it is still different. So you're right in that sense.
So yeah, I definitely need to look into that some more, and like, because it's not as hard as I'm making it in my head, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, bro. So man, we're almost at the hour and a half mark. So I don't want to hold you too late. Time flew by because I didn't realize like we had been on for that long, man. It's just a good conversation. I do have some random questions that I want to ask first, and then we can get into a couple more things before we get out of here and let you enjoy the rest of your night. But the first one, I mean, you've already lived in Costa Rica and that sounded like it was really dope. But the first one is, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
You know, I like Asia a lot. And so probably Philippines or Indonesia, that area. I like the beach. I like surfing, and I like the food there. And I like the cost of living is very cheap. So I like that.
Nice. So if you won $10 million tomorrow, how would you use it?
Man, that's a good question. I'm pretty conservative. Unless I'm investing in snakes, I guess. it would probably go to just, making sure your house is paid off, kids' college is done, and then probably invest half and save half and keep on living the way we're living. I'd have to upgrade the collection, obviously, and the facilities.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a must. Maybe Yeah.
Aside from the fake stuff, what type of investments would you do?
So I think in that sense, I'd probably just be buying land. Land and properties, maybe rental properties or multifamily properties. I do like starting businesses. Not that I've ever had a super successful one, but I like just starting stuff and seeing what happens with it. So I probably play around with some of that as well and see if anything would happen. It's funny. I don't trust the stock market much. So I think the riskiest investments that I'm going to be making is with snakes.
All right. So having been in the hobby before, kind of chilling a little bit and then getting back into it on the comeback, like, what's been the biggest surprise for you so far?
I think how fast this is moving now. Like, it is. It seems exponential year after year because you're combining so many genes and recessives. And, you know, some of us we're trying to work double recessives, and we have quad recessives that are floating around already, visual quad recessives. And then everything in between. And so there's probably projects that are getting lost in the middle of that, good projects. But you see breeders working their thing. And I really enjoy that. But I think the most surprising thing is I've just felt recently how fast this is really moving.
Do you feel like it's moving too fast? Like, I know I've heard a lot of people say this, and in a lot of ways I kind of agree. Like, there's like so much like double stuff that still needs to be done. But like, to your point, we're in the triples, we're in the quads. Do you think it's moving too fast? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's moving too fast. I think we'll get to a point where we're going to have to start adding codons back into the doubles and triples and quads, and that takes time. So imagine, you know, if the last 3 years were kind of a bubble of just like exponential growth, if that was on the fast side of the pendulum, I would imagine it's going to kind of start swinging back as we all start to, like I said, as we all mature as people, and we want to really work our projects and choose the best of the best and really focus down on what we want to work with. And I think that'll the industry will continue to grow, and then we can get some depth to it besides just, you know, just being, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep. We'll get some more depth into the industry, I hope.
Great way to put it. All right, and lastly, bro, if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, I think I got to say Jesus. Whether you believe in him or not, I think the fact that history is kind of mapped around his life is a pretty important deal. I think both my grandfathers at the same dinner table, but maybe the one that passed away when I was about 10 or 11, a lot of history, fought in World War II, that kind of thing. Would have loved to get more time with him. And then some historical figure. Obviously, yeah, some historical figure, but someone who was probably, I'd love to understand one of these dictators. Like, just talk to, like, maybe, like, I don't know, Genghis Khan or Stalin or something. Just try to get a grasp on where that mindset is coming from would be pretty interesting to me. Where you know, human life is valued so little over their own ambition. That'd be pretty fascinating conversation, I think. So,
gotcha. Yeah, I've had that answer before, or a similar answer too. Like, not because like you agree, but you're just wondering kind of like, what the heck is going on in your mind?
Yeah, what drives what right. can drive a human being to do that kind of thing? So
exactly. Yeah. Well, bro, it's been a great episode tonight, man. I really appreciate you stopping by to chat it up with us. Before we get out of here, tell everybody where they can find you and make any announcements you got to make. The floor is yours.
Oh, thanks. Well, thanks so much, Mike, for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. So you can find me on Instagram at Arjun Reptiles. And then I'm actually on YouTube. So if you look at Arjun Reptiles on YouTube, obviously I have my Morph Market store, and I do have a Facebook page. I don't know if anyone follows it, but it's connected to my Instagram. So it'd be basically doubling up on the content there. But yeah, that's about it. And glad to have been here and been on and chat a little bit.
Yes, sir, bro. Again, man, appreciate you sliding through and chatting with us. Speaking of chatting, appreciate everybody who came through for the live chat. Shout out to the Replay Gang. Appreciate all of y'all. Shout out to the Audio Only Gang. Really appreciate all the support each and every week. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's show. We're going to get out of here. You want to hang back for just a second, bro?
Yep.
All right. Well, thank y'all for coming out. Be blessed. Peace.